Going Linux, episode 201, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, listener feedback. One more thing while you listen to the rest of this episode. Hi, I'm Larry Bushy, host of the Going Linux podcast. Jonathan Nadeau and Bruce Patterson have asked me to remind you about the Northeast GNU Linux Fest, NELF 2013. This year, NELF will be held on March 16th and 17th at Harvard University. For details, please visit www.northeastlinuxfest.org. Or you can keep in touch real-time through Identica, Northeast Linux, Twitter, at Northeast Linux, or Facebook, Northeast Linux Fest. Well, Bill, Tom's not here again, so we'll proceed ahead, just the two of us. We'll have a good show.
Oh, yeah. Has he been on Skype at all?
Not that I've seen. I don't know where he is, but I'm sure we'll hear from him as soon as things are back to normal for him.
So I get his office now, right?
Yeah, you get his voicemail, I guess.
Okay.
his personal assistant taking messages for him. Yes, there you go.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Bill. This is Nightwise from Nightwise.com calling. I have a complaint. Just a few minutes before show number 2100 was recorded, I heard an enormously loud crash in my backyard. I immediately went outside to see that an object had fallen from the sky. Thinking about the events in Russia, I thought I was lucky. I got to have my own little meteorite impact, and I was ready to write a letter to Bruce Willis to complain. However, the object that had fallen from the sky turned out to be a jet engine. A jet engine that, upon closer inspection, was running Linux. I looked over the hardware specs and took a look at the kernel, and it somewhere said, "Property of Tom." I was worried because I thought that somewhere along his cruising altitude of 50,000 feet, something went wrong with Tom's aircraft. So I looked for signs of wear and tear, thinking that the jet engine might have sheared off in mid-flight. Great was my surprise when I saw that there was no damage whatsoever. The bolts had been deliberately unfastened. Who would do such a thing at 50,000 feet? Dear Tom, I will now FedEx you your jet engine. Postal costs will be billed to you, of course. And it's from Belgium, so it's a long way. Hope that you take better care of your in-flight material in flight next time. This was Nightwise from the Nightwise.com podcast with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks, where we do the hacks, tips, and tweaks on the ground, in the hangar, and then we take off, and not the other way around. See you.
Well, thanks, Nightwise. Bill, that wasn't one of Tom's emails, but it was a voicemail addressed to the two of us, and we're going to have to figure out what's going on with Tom one way or another. He keeps dropping stuff all over people. That's not good. Anyway, tell us, Bill, what's been going on in your Linux life?
Well, you know, I've been playing with Steam still.
Okay.
And it's fun. I enjoy it quite a bit. I wanted to see how different it was. So, you know, I have my main machine also has Windows on it, so uh-huh. I installed it, except for a few games that it doesn't have, you know, because I guess they're still porting them. It runs almost identical. It might be a little bit slower loading as well on Team Fortress, but nothing really perceptible. It's really Team Fortress. I guess I'm just addicted to it now. Yeah, I die so much. But it's fun when I, you know, set someone on fire or hit them with a grenade. You know, it's awesome.
But, it's a game. Yep.
Yeah, it's a game. Really, there's not much to say that they're adding games to Steam all the time for Linux, and I believe that this is really going to be something great. I've got a review, and I just finished it up because, you know, I want to make sure that anything I said that about it running on Linux would also apply to Windows and Mac, and so it seems to be well thought out, and there's really no difference in the clients. So you know what I've been doing. I've been fragging people. So that's all I got to say.
Okay. How about you? Well, I'm hoping there's more to your review than just, it works the same as Windows.
And I'm fragging people. There's nothing like when you're a sniper and you get that headshot and it goes critical hit and they fall over. That's awesome. And when you set people on fire with the pyro. Oh, wait, I better stop.
Yeah. Don't give your review here. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that. For me, no, I'm still waiting for my poor little laptop to come back from the shop. First of all, they thought it was a ribbon cable to the display. It had this gray bar up the right-hand side. So when they handed it back to me, I powered it on and I said, wait a minute, the gray bar is still there. And the guy said, well, that's not quite how you described it on the phone, so I'm thinking it might be the LCD display. So they ordered an LCD display, and they waited for it to come in, and they replaced it. And I called the guy up when, you know, I expected it to be ready, and he said, well, as soon as we powered it on after we put in the display and we got it all back together and all the screws put in and, you know, all that stuff, it came up one color, red. So they think they've got a bad LCD display from the manufacturer. You would think they would have turned it on and checked it before they put all the screws back together, but no. So now we're waiting for the manufacturer to send a replacement LCD screen, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm still without my laptop. So.
One of my nurse friends gave me her laptop to look at. She said she had taken it to, I won't say their name, but a tech service, and they said that the hard drive was bad.
Does it rhyme with Meeks Mod?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
So, anyways, she brought it and said that the hard drive, and this guy printed out this huge list, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll look at it for you. And of course, she didn't make any of the disks. And if the hard drive, it goes bad, it has the recovery partition on the hard drive.
Right.
She said, I need a computer. So I had my spare Linux machine. And so I said, here, I'll set up a guest. I'll bring it to you, and you can use this while I look at your computer. And she went, I don't think I can use Linux. I said, don't worry, I'll set it up with Firefox. She's doing all her online banking now and stuff, and she's happy as a lark. And so I called her and I said, well, I think I might have to replace your hard drive in this machine, and then I'll be able to get it back to you as soon as I figure out how to get a. I'm going to have to call Dell and see if I can't get a disk. Because she had Windows Vista.
Oof. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, anyway, make a long story short, she says, well, that's take your time. I like this machine just fine. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to really work at it too hard. Just whenever. I was like, uh-huh. So she likes Linux. She says, I like this. I just hit the button. I don't have to worry about anything. And I'm like, yeah. And she says, actually, it runs better than my old machine, so just take your time. So I was like, okay then, you know, that is my spare machine there.
Yeah, but you lost the machine.
Yeah,
you could always offer to put that on her computer, you know.
I'm going to let it, I've got to see if I can't order a hard drive for it.
Yeah.
And then actually, it has mint on it, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So she likes mint.
Good.
And so I might get a going Linux person out of that because, you know, she's using it and she really says, it does everything I want. I can go to my Facebook. I can do my online banking. I can play my DVDs and I can listen to my music. So she says, this is great.
Yeah. And good. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I got to hurry up or she's going to claim my machine and I'm stuck with a broken one.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. Well, back to our podcast.
Yeah.
That was a going Linux out of necessity story.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Okay. Well, shall we start with our listener feedback?
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Our first voicemail is from Robert. He complains about having to enter his password too many times. So let's listen to that and see what he has to say.
Hi, Tom and Larry. This is Robert, and I have some questions about the PC Linux OS, and I was trying to, install it, and I installed it, and basically I didn't like the interface, so I basically uninstalled it and overwrote it. There were too many, passwords and authentications and, you know, if you have any, tips to, give to me, you can send them to my email and let you know I, subscribe to your, podcast. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Okay. Well, Robert, thanks for that.
Yeah.
And unlike Windows, which will let you do just about anything without checking your credentials to make sure that you've really authorized it, Linux has a little bit better built-in security, and it's going to ask you for your password whenever you do something that's going to change the system. So if you're installing software, if you're performing some sort of function that needs administrative privileges, it's going to ask you for your password. And there may be some utilities or maybe some scripts you can run to bypass that. But really, that's not something you want to do. Windows used to be set up so that it would never ask for you for a password, and you could actually log into the system without a password. You still can, but it is asking you more and more for authentication for your password to do administrative stuff as well. Some of that you can turn off in Windows, but no matter which version of Linux you choose, PC Linux OS, Ubuntu, Linux Mint, Fedora, they're all going to ask you for your password.
Yeah, that's just a kind of a quirk of Linux. They're going to ask you to put your password in. PC Linux OS is one of my favorites. You can't go wrong with that distribution. I would say go to their forums and talk to and just tell them you're having problems. They are some of the friendliest forums I've ever known. And I'll put the link to their forums in our show notes for you. Just go and say, look, I'm having problems, because it sounds like he might have, said his, might be entering his password more than I ever had to. I don't know exactly everything, but those guys over at PC Linux OS can walk him through the install, and because I only remember putting my password in one or two times during the whole thing.
Yeah. And I don't know what he's actually replaced it with. He says he's overwritten PC Linux OS, so he may not even be using it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But, and I think his complaint was after it was installed. He said he didn't like the user interface, so that's fine.
Well, that's KDE, so.
Yeah, he could have changed that. You know, new Linux users don't really aren't really aware that you don't have to reinstall to get a different desktop environment. You can actually just install a different desktop environment.
He didn't like how many times he was having to put his password in.
Exactly, exactly. So when you install something, it's going to ask you for your password, and that's it. I mean, there are some things you can do. There's a setting that you can use, and I don't recall it off the top of my head, on some Linux distributions that will allow you a certain period of time after entering your password that it's not going to ask you again, like 15 minutes or something like that.
Actually, Ubuntu and Mint, I believe it's 10 minutes.
Yeah. I actually think the current versions of Mint have it shorter than Ubuntu does.
Okay.
I know they were exactly the same for a while, but that helps. And you could set that for a very long time, which kind of defeats the purpose. And the purpose is to keep you safe.
Well, you know, PC Linux OS uses Synaptic for their
package manager, sure.
And to update their system. As long as you don't close Synaptic, I've been able to install things, you know, back to back. So maybe he's installing it and then closing it.
Okay.
And so when you, but like I said, that is an adjustable setting. Ubuntu has it at 10 minutes. I'm almost 100% sure. PC Linux, I believe, as long as it's your package manager's open, it stays. It stays authorized to, you know, to add packages. I would like to know if he wants to send us another voicemail and tell me what he replaced it with. And he also can send an email to us. And what I'll do is I'll forward it to some of the guys I know over at PC Linux OS and or whatever version he's using, and see if I can't get him some one-on-one help.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that, Robert. Mm-hmm. And I know I've had a couple of emails about this and I think some posts in our forum. So hopefully that helps more than you.
Yeah.
Okay. Our first email is from Gord, who writes, I use WinFF for video conversions. Most often I am converting from the format produced by my video camera to something Cinelera likes. Since I don't need to keep the files, I use settings which produce huge files, get them into Cinelera, render my final product, then delete the files I don't need anymore. WinFF is just a GUI for FFmpeg. It may have been superseded by a program called AVConv. AV convert, I guess.
AV convert, whatever.
Or something along those lines in the Ubuntu Software Center. WinFF provides complete control over the factors which determine the output size. If you take the defaults, you might be disappointed by the quality of the output or by how much space it takes. Regards, Gord. In his signature, he says Q&A column, Full Circle Magazine.
Yeah, I like Full Circle Magazine. Actually, they have a podcast, I believe, also.
Yes, they do.
Okay, I know. I believe you can download their magazine from the Ubuntu Software Center.
Yes, and it is good. I've read a couple of issues of that, and I've listened to the Full Circle Magazine episodes that have been on Hacker Public Radio.
Oh, okay. So they've done some Hacker Public Radio too?
Yeah, I think what they've done there is they've syndicated their content into Hacker Public Radio episodes. Certainly not the full podcast, I would imagine, but some of them.
Okay. Well, you know, I like WinFF. It's like the Swiss Army knife of conversions. You can do about anything.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Okay. Mike told us in an email how he converts video. He wrote, when I need to convert a video to XVID or AVI, most of the time I use Avidimux.
Avidimux.
Oh, okay. A great little graphical program utility. And on those rare instances when I run into a particularly troublesome file, I use the old Swiss Army knife VLC. It plays in VLC, then VLC can convert it. Mike, I didn't know VLC could convert.
Yeah, it can. It can do some conversions. And, of course, it'll play anything.
Yeah, I love VLC. It's on my Linux box. It's on my Windows box. It's on my Macintosh. It's on everything. It can play just about anything. And I thought I had found a file. Someone had recorded their deceased father singing. Mm-hmm. And their phone was dying, so they sent me the email. You know, they attached it, and I looked at, when it come in, I'm looking at this weird file. It's like GPS 3.2, and I'm like, no way VLC is gonna play this. Clicked it, VLC played it, and I'm like, really? Is there nothing you can't do? Now that I know it can convert, I'm gonna see if I can't get it to convert that file, because I know for a fact there's no other. Well, there might be, but I don't know of any other program that can just play this many files. VLC is like the go-to.
Yep, absolutely. And there are certainly plenty of ways to convert things on Linux, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. You got plenty of ways to convert audio anyway.
Yes. Okay, so our next email is from Jay, who sent us a great message. It was great to hear from a loyal listener, a longtime Linux user, and someone with a great Gone Linux story. It's even better when those characteristics are all in one person. Hello, Larry, Tom, and Bill. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
First off, thanks to you all for the great show. Going Linux was actually the first podcast I had ever listened to when a friend gave me a second-generation iPod Shuffle as a gift many years ago. I naturally got it working on Rhythmbox under Linux, but needed some content to listen to. Going Linux was an obvious choice. I've spread out to other podcasts since those days, but still enjoy listening to your shows on my commute. I have been using Linux on my laptops in dual boot mode since 1997, but officially went Linux over Thanksgiving 2008. My job allows me to use my own laptop for work as long as I'm willing to support it myself. I can use whatever operating system I prefer. I keep XP on a virtual machine for the occasional need I have in the office for PowerPoint presentations, but the rest of my system is securely in my favorite operating system. I've been using the Red Hat brand of Linux since my early days with it. When I started my most recent job, Fedora 15 was the latest and greatest. Lately, however, the security updates have stopped and I've noticed things have been dragging a bit. Fedora 18 recently came out, but I have found upgrading a system with the built-in utilities to be painful. It was important to minimize downtime as I need this laptop for daily work. I decided I would minimize the delays by installing Fedora 18 on a new hard drive and, once it was stable, transfer the files from my backups to the new drive. I figured if I was going to get a new drive, I might as well get an SSD since I have heard all the great things you and others have been saying about them. I ended up buying a Samsung 840 Pro Series 256GB SSD drive. Installation was easy in my system, and the ability to have hardware encryption on the drive gives me the security to know my data is safe if the laptop is stolen, while not noticeably affecting performance. The migration went well, taking less than 4 hours, but I knew there were things I should do to prolong the drive life. I recall Larry's tips from show 195, tweaking Linux for SSD optimization. While I had a few of these items in place, I didn't think about using RAM for temporary and log files. As of this evening, all of the tweaks are in place and the system is humming along very nicely. Boot time went from over 2 minutes on my older drive to less than 30 seconds from power on to desktop access, including the time... Yes, including the time it takes for me to type in my password. I've got that same new laptop feeling Larry has with his HP laptop. And I've got the comfort of knowing I've made the necessary changes to prolong the life of this drive to its max. I just wanted to say thanks for all the great tips, not only in optimizing the drives, but also for kicking the tires so the rest of us had the confidence it would work when it was needed. There's always something to learn, and it's great to know you guys keep sharing the knowledge. Keep up the great work. Well, what a great message, Jay. Thanks.
Yeah, and you're really brave using Red Hat or Fedora. You said he's running Fedora, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fedora. Oh, wow. Well, Fedora 15 I liked, but Fedora 18, wow, he's hardcore. All I'm going to say is I'm not brave enough to use Fedora on my daily commuter there. So, wow, congratulations, dude. I'm impressed. And, you know, just so you know, I'm getting jealous of everybody getting these SSDs now.
Yeah, that's your next step, I guess. we may actually get some feedback on this because he mentions that he keeps an XP virtual machine around for PowerPoint mm-hmm. presentations. And, of course, you can do presentations in PowerPoint format on LibreOffice or OpenOffice, and you can save them in OpenOffice or LibreOffice format as well. But I have found, and many others have found, when using Open or LibreOffice in a work setting where everyone else is using Microsoft's version of Office, when they produce presentations using PowerPoint, they do not convert well to LibreOffice or to OpenOffice. So I can see why he would want to keep an XP virtual machine around just for that. Yeah. It's almost a necessity.
Well, you know, April of this year, XP is officially dead. So, I don't know if you should keep using it. Well, I don't know. I guess if it's just using it for that one thing, it wouldn't make a big difference.
Right.
But
just don't connect it to the internet. You should be
fine.
Yeah,
don't connect to the internet because they're killing it off. You know, that's the only downside to that, to having a virtual machine is that is XP's finally going the way of the dodo. But anyway, Jay continued in a follow-up email. He wrote, "Hi, Larry."
Hi, Jay.
Yeah, okay. No hi, chief executive minion or anything. Or no. Tom. Or, okay, just hi, Larry.
Yep, yep.
Okay, but I'm going to say anyway. Hi, Jay. Okay. Thanks for the reply. I actually discovered one item which may be of interest to you with the settings you provided in the article. I occasionally do some web development work on my laptop using Joomla. One web page I have been working on suddenly stopped working after I made the updates in your article. It turns out neither the HTTPD Apache web server daemon nor the MySQL backend database daemon were auto-starting at boot anymore. I traced the problem down on both issues to the fact that they couldn't write to the /var/log directory. In MySQL's case, it seemed like a permissions problem to the main var-log location. I ended up opening up write permissions on the var log in my fstab to tempfs-var-log tempfs. Defaults, comma, no a time, comma, mode, dash, 0777, space, 0, space, 0. Now, I realize this isn't the best permission setting for security, but the logs disappear at every boot anyway, and I'm the sole user of this laptop, so I can live with it. The HTTPD daemon was expecting there to be a /var/log/HTTPD subdirectory available, but I found it wasn't being created at boot. So I added a script to create a subdirectory at boot time and then create a link to each of the required directories under /etc/rc.d/rc*d to auto-generate the directory at each boot time. This solved the Apache issue. Just one side note for your readers. As stated above, putting /var/log in RAM does save wear and tear on your hard drive, but it does mean the log files from a previous boot will no longer be available after a reboot. This will make tracking down a faulty boot cycle a bit difficult, or make it harder to track down the footsteps of a system break-in. For the boot issue problem, I can see restoring the /etc/fstab settings to their original format temporarily to debug the session, but the intruder scenario is one to keep in mind. keep those firewalls up. Thanks again for the article.
Right. And if you find that some of the rerouting of some of those temporary and log files into RAM is something you'd prefer not to do, then, of course, you just comment those out in the FSTAB file and adjust to your own preferences, as Jay has done.
You know, Larry, I just want to say I'm impressed more and more by our listeners. The ideas they come up with to get things to work shows that, one, we have some of the smartest listeners around, but also that Linux can be made to do just about anything you need it to do.
Yep, that's exactly right. And the veteran Linux users like Jay is have known that for years, of course. But it's the new Linux users that can benefit from the experience of these smart veteran Linux users that we have in our audience. That's great.
Yeah, they can also post if they have problems in their in our forums that was set up by Steve McLaughlin.
So. Right. Or in Google Plus communities, or we've got lots of places. Email us, voicemail, all that stuff we talk about at the end of the show.
Yeah, so there's always someone willing to help. If we don't know the answer, which happens occasionally, or actually a lot of times, there's always someone out there that's smarter and has the answer. So I'm just saying, you know, new listeners, don't get scared by all these log files or anything, because these are experienced users that are doing stuff that you probably won't do for a very long time.
Yeah. Okay, so our next email is from Benjamin, who wrote, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Benjamin. Hi, Benjamin.
Surprise, surprise. There's an open format player for the iOS platform. I hope it works because I had it on my iPhone 4, but never got around to ripping my CD collection to Opus format to try it out. I now have an Android phone, so I don't care for iOS anymore. Here is the link for the app, and we'll include that in the show notes. I also wanted to mention a website for the gentleman wanting screen magnification software. And he leads us to www.sonarproject.org. We'll have a word about that in a moment. Let's just finish up Benjamin's email. This was a website for Linux distro for people with all kinds of disabilities. I've very nearly gone Linux myself. I mentioned my Android phone, although I think that Android is L-I-N-O, Linux in name only, a lot like R-I-N-O, Republican in name only. It is very locked down to most folks. My laptop will soon have Fedora 18 on it, after I've read more of the installation documentation for it. Thanks for the great show. And we'll have the link to the Sonar project, but this is the project that Jonathan Nadeau is spearheading, and it is an excellent project for developing accessible GNU Linux operating system using free assistive technology, an entire operating system dedicated to disabilities of all kinds, so it could be used by blind or deaf or physically challenged people, and that's the whole goal behind it. We'll have a link. They are a startup, so please donate to them. They have a donation button right on their homepage. Go right there and help them out. And, of course, if you are a programmer and you can help out with the project, I'm sure they would love to have some help there. If you are a document writer, I'm sure once they have this thing up and running, they'll need some documentation for it, so you can donate from that perspective. And as well, if you are a user who has need of this kind of thing, of course, it will be available for you as soon as they have it ready to go. But this is an exciting project. And
Jonathan does a great job.
Absolutely. And we're happy to promote it. That's for sure.
Well, you know, Jonathan is really going after this accessibility pretty hard. You know, he's a blind user and he used Vinix for a long time. One of the things that he finds it really it's kind of low as to how expensive it is to get accessibility software on Windows. There's one called I think Claws that's really, really expensive. And if the government doesn't buy it for you, it's called JAWS.
Right.
And if the government doesn't buy it for you, you're basically, forced to try to find that money yourself. It's expensive.
Thousands of dollars. Yep.
Is it really that much?
Yeah. Wow. A couple of thousand. I understand. Yeah.
I knew it was expensive, but then you've also got to, get the laptop with Windows, because JAWS doesn't run under Linux at all, does it? Does it run under Wine?
No. Not that I'm aware of. Nope.
So yeah, so he wants to allow anybody with an accessibility problem to be able to use Linux and to be able to do the day-to-day stuff that we take for granted. So we're very happy to really promote this. And like I said, if you can help him out, please do.
Yeah, and it's not only just to do the day-to-day stuff. It's also to be able to be employed. When you have a computer system that can do what you need it to do, including a screen reader if you're blind, then you can have a job. And if your computer doesn't do the things you need it to do because of your disabilities, and you can't afford to purchase the software that makes it work because you don't have a job, you're in a catch-22 situation.
Well, yeah, you are.
And so this distribution of Linux, the Sonar project, is going to be something that will help break that cycle. Yes. Yeah.
Well, good luck to Jonathan, and like I said, if you can help him out, please do. We got another email from Andrew, and he wrote, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. He says, "I found this after a quick Google that may help you with DRM infection in your apples." And he links to how can I remove DRM from my iTunes music without transcoding. Also, I have used SharePod, and the link for it's in the show notes, but it's http://www.getsharepod.com to recover songs off iPods that no longer have a synced computer. An excellent tool since pairing iPods and iPhones with new or rebuilt computers erases its memory. Not sure if it will affect DRM, but it's worth a try. Unfortunately, it seems to be a window-only program. Have a poke for yourselves and see how you go. Hopefully you will reduce the several months worth of audiobooks ripping to a couple of hours or days. Good luck. Andrew from Perth, Australia." Thanks, Andrew. I'll look at it, but I'm trying to do all my ripping with Linux tools just to see if I can do it. Or open source, I should say. I should use open source tools. But I'll look at that. What do you think about this, Larry?
Well, I think this is very helpful if you've got some old DRM music in iTunes. I don't think they're putting DRM on the latest stuff. And I know that Apple has utility that helps you to remove the DRM. Maybe it's not a utility. Maybe it's just a process of deleting the file and then re-downloading it from the iTunes store, and it'll download it without DRM. But of course, if you've got an old iPod or an iPhone hanging around and it's got music on it that has DRM, that may not be an option for you. So yeah, this might be an excellent tool.
Yeah, Apple no longer, as far as I know, puts DRM on the music. I think they're using AAC or MP3. Not quite sure, because I haven't bought much music from them lately. I've been using the Amazon Music Store or the Ubuntu Music Store, and I know they use MP3s without DRM. So,
right,
great idea, great way to maybe fix your problem with your iPod, your old iPods or iPhones. So, I'll look at it and see what I can do with it.
Yep, sounds good. Another longtime listener, Nancy, provided this challenge. Hiya, fellas. Hi,
Nancy.
Well, y'all are still here and I'm still here. Great show. I enjoy every episode. Here's a question I haven't heard asked or answered. The background. I extensively use my Microsoft Windows machines, yes, plural. I use the words, they're not cuss words. I never ever had any kind of infection on any of my Windows machines, ever. Now, part of it is our lousy internet, where download speeds are still measured in Ks. Part of it is that our computers are tools, not toys. I have two teens, and I expect that at some point I will have to do a cleanup, but so far, so good. I also have a Mac, and I use it a lot as well. My main use of the Mac is to keep my hands in the Mac games so I don't forget how to service them. But I have Audacity and Creative Suite on it, so I can also use it for productivity. I use Quicken, and there are similar apps for Linux, but there isn't Quicken. I have been using Quicken for over 10 years, and I intend to keep using Quicken. Additionally, none of the banks I do business with have any download options for Linux. I can always justify keeping my Windows machines because I use some Microsoft software that has not been ported to Mac or Linux, and my Epson printer does not have a Mac driver. Linux just finds the printer and uses it, which is great, but I need to set up a file and print server so all of our machines can print to both of our printers. I could actually give up my Mac if I had to, because there isn't anything on the Mac that I can't do on Windows machine or in Linux. I just like it. I got a great deal on it, so I keep it. I want to justify using Linux for more than just being a geek, although that is reason enough, given the cost of it. I want to find something that Linux does that neither of the other platforms does. Blender, got it on all three. Python, got it on all three. Audacity, all three. For me, virus-free is not a selling point. I need a reason to run a system that requires so much hand-holding. I really don't have time to play around with something just to make it work, unless that's the only way to get something done. My Windows machine just works. My Mac just works. I have OpenSUSE, Ubuntu, Mint, and Fedora. I really love Linux. That's just the geek in me. But I want to make it worth the effort to tinker. Let's see what you come up with. And Bill, I see an episode in the making right there. What do you think?
Yeah. I think that you're right. I officially accept this challenge, and I'm now going to have to see what I can come up with.
Yeah,
but that's a great challenge, and I tell you what, she has as many machines as I do.
Yeah, exactly, and yeah, and as far as not getting viruses on Windows, yeah, it's pretty easy as long as you practice safe computing. And, you know, I use Windows at work. I use Windows machine at home. And I used Windows for a long time prior to using Linux and never had an infection that I didn't induce myself. And there was one early on in my Windows using days that I remember quite vividly, because there were all kinds of pop-up windows and all kinds of stuff going on my computer. I got rid of that and have never had an infection since. So, yeah, it's pretty easy to do. But unsophisticated computer users would find the convenience of not having any viruses available for an operating system be one of those things. And that is one thing that Linux can do that Windows can't do and Mac can't do, and that is avoid virus infections that are in the wild, because there aren't any in the wild for Linux.
Well, we're going to, as you said, we're going to probably have an episode about that. That's a great idea, mm-hmm. And I look forward to kind of digging down into this subject a little bit more.
Yep, and I remember somebody mentioning that on Google Plus as well. So combined with that post and this challenge, I think we're on.
All right. Thanks, Nancy. That's a great idea. Okay, our next email comes from David. He wrote, "Hi, TLB.
Hi, David.
Hi, David. Someone asked me to edit some PDFs they had made a while ago, and I was hoping you could help me figure out the best way to go about doing this. The PDFs are of forms that they want their customers to fill out. Should I grab the first PDF editor that shows up on the repository list, or maybe I should try to edit the PDFs in GIMP as PDFs, or some, maybe convert the PDFs to a JPEG form first? I originally figured converting them to text or doc and editing them like that would be best because they could make future changes on their own. But I guess I'm a little unsure if a word processor, i.e. LibreOffice Writer, would be able to keep the form in order as it currently is without jumbling all the different fields up. That's more a footnote on my capacities than the program's. Well, I understand this may be a hard question to answer without at least seeing a form, but I was hoping that I might have given enough information to give you an idea of what I'm up against, and any help is appreciated. David R., a.k.a. Pyro Chameleon?
Yep. Okay, David, I have used a few PDF editors, and yes, you can use the GIMP, since PDF files can be graphics files, and you can go in and you can edit them that way. It seems like a lot of work to me. Mm-hmm. There are some better tools out there, and the best ones that I have come across are PDF Shuffler, which is primarily for changing which pages come first. In other words, page order or merging two PDF documents together that have multiple pages and switching the order of the pages. Although it can do some minor other kinds of editing, that's mainly what it's for. PDF Chain, PDFCHAIN, is another one that allows you to do PDF editing quite a little more extensively than that. But I think these two are probably the best ones that I've come across and actually used.
I thought that LibreOffice handled PDFs natively.
It does for creating them. And you can...
I thought you could edit them.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay, maybe that's something new.
Well, I'm almost positive now. I could be wrong, but I remember working with a PDF that someone sent me, and I opened it up in LibreOffice, and I'm almost positive, unless I'm lost my mind, and that's possible. I thought LibreOffice let me interact with it natively.
Okay.
But then again, you know, your mileage may vary. I'm going to have to go check now. I know I have a PDF laying around here.
Yeah.
But as a side note, I want to put this tip in. If any of you are applying for jobs and you have to send your resume, send it with a PDF. The reason for this is that it keeps its formatting on whatever computer they use or software to open it. Unlike sometimes if you try to send it with the rich text format of Microsoft or you know, I know what's LibreOffice, ODT.
Mm-hmm.
They might have problems with it, but if you send it with PDF, it keeps its formatting and so it looks nice all the time. And that tip actually works because I've used it. I had to send a file. You know, kind of a form that for work, and I sent it as a PDF, and it worked just fine. And I got that tip from Phoenix Online,
mm-hmm.
or they because they always have those tips, and I thought that was a really good one. I mean, so just an idea.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, our last email is from someone. And I'm not sure whether it's from a member of the British aristocracy, but it's from someone who signed his name Lord Burghley. Huh. Okay. Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill.
Hi, Lord
Burghley. I'm getting back into Linux after a brief hiatus, and much has changed in my absence. I'm in the process of settling on a distro to use on my main computer with the intention of dual booting with my Windows 7 installation. I'm keeping 7 for gaming, as at my skill level, I am not confident I can make my favorites work properly on a Linux box. In order to accomplish this, I have been using a little program called Lili on 7 to create live USB drives. Lili only runs in Windows, a fact that irritates me a bit as I really like the interface, not to mention the fact that it just works. Also, I have a second older laptop that I would like to use for future distro hopping. I've discovered that it can be fun and free addiction. I intended to use the live USB format for that purpose as well. My question to y'all is this. Y'all? That doesn't sound like it's British aristocracy.
It's a southern thing. Okay. He's a southern aristocrat.
There you go. Okay. My question to y'all is there something similar to Lili for Linux? I have searched for and have not been able to find on my own a program that fits the bill. A lot of the forums talk about fiery hoops that have to be jumped through, things that work for this distro but not that one, and the rather terrifying possibility of having to actually use that command line thingy is that scares the hoo-has out of noobs like me. At my level of experience, I can only compare opening the terminal as putting a loaded gun in the hands of a four-year-old. As I find myself in the position of being able to do so, allow me to take a moment to sincerely thank y'all for your work. Folks like you are what makes the advancement of free and open software and Linux in general possible. Kindest regards, Lord Berkeley. Yes. Okay. So the one tool that's cross-platform that I know about and have used is
UNetBootin.
That's it. UNetBootin. Exactly. It works on Windows, Mac, Linux, and it works the same way on all of them, and it works perfectly well. So go find that one.
UNetBootin works on all platforms, like Larry said. But here's a cool little tip that you make sure you always get the latest and greatest. Go to the distro that you want and download it and save it anywhere in your downloads or save it on your desktop, wherever you want to save it. Open up UNetBootin and then there's a you click ISO and then point it to that ISO, the distro you just downloaded, and it will use the latest and greatest. It will put it on your USB that way. I found that using it, the pull-down menu where it has all those distros that you can get, I find that they're older. They're not the latest distros out there. So I always download them and then use UNetBootin to take that ISO and to put it on the USB. Then you can just get rid of the ISO. So right. It works perfect. It works perfectly.
Yep. I've used it both ways through the little menu. And through burning from saved ISO, and both work equally well. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Bill, sometimes, depending on the version of UNetBootin you have, sometimes they've got older versions of Linux in the dropdowns, but you can get any version of Linux you want, and you can install it on your USB using UNetBootin without any trouble at all.
Yeah, and Lord, just to let you know, Command line is not that evil. Do not worry about that. The great thing about Linux is that you really don't even have to use it anymore unless you want to. Sometimes it's more convenient to use a command line. But like I said, if it scares you, don't even look at it.
Yep. There's usually a way around some graphical user interface somebody's built.
Yeah, we all like GUIs.
Yes. Okay, that's it for this episode. Our next episode is Computer America number 60.
60. Wow.
60. Yep. It's almost been 5 years I've been on America.
You've been doing that for 5 years?
Yes, sir.
Wow. And so that's, now you say Computer America 60. That's 60 times you've been on them.
All right. Actually, it's 61. A listener made the comment that the first time I appeared on Computer America, I didn't number it. So this will be my 61st appearance on Computer America.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, and they're getting better, I think. They really are.
I think you slowly worn them down. So there are a lot. I listened to it, and they seem to be a little bit more friendly to Linux than when you first got there. When you first got on Computer America, they seemed kind of adversarial.
Yep.
But now they seem to be more open to it, especially the Craig.
Yeah.
He seems to really just, you know, accepted it. And I think one of his sons uses it exclusively. And I think he's like a scientist or something. So, hey.
Yeah, I don't know what he does for a living, but yes, indeed, he uses Linux full time, as do we.
Linux is a part of my daily life. I'm, like I said, I have machines, I have virtual machines, I have machines it's installed on. The nice part about it, I have found that I don't have to use or look hard to use Linux. I don't have to say, oh, I have to use Linux here, because usually Linux has exactly what I need.
Yep.
You know, like I said, there's nothing evil if you have to use Windows or Mac. I mean, I think Nightwise is kind of, he as long as it works for him, he doesn't care.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, quite honestly, although I use and focus on Linux most of the time, I'm okay with using Windows and learning to use Mac. I haven't used Mac, I guess Nightwise calls himself a slider, cross-platform slider. I guess I'm a closet cross-platform slider.
Well, like I said, you know, use what works for you, but we think that Linux usually fits the bill, and I like Linux, and I like the idea behind it, so that's why if I can use it, I do. And I'm not forced to use it. I just like using it.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so like I said, our next episode is Computer America number 60. And until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use the forums to leave your topic suggestion in the thread labeled topic suggestions at forum.goinglinux.com.
If you want to support our efforts, click the donate button while you're at our site. You can send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail is +1-904-468-7889.
Follow our show updates on Twitter, tweet us at Going Linux, or join our Google Plus community. Look for Going Linux Podcast.
You can download the episodes from our website, or you can play them right from the show notes page. Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.